I remember years ago when my children were your age and going to youth rallies. There was one in Randallstown at the time, and everybody had to go to Randallstown. No matter what part of the country you lived in, everybody converged on Randallstown. And our ones were champing at the bit to get going. My eldest guy, I think it was, had just passed his driving test. "Dad, can I go?" And I was kind of willing him, "Yeah, that's fine, you have to get experience, so yeah, that'll be okay." Mum's like, no, tell him he can't go. They ended up, Mum said, "I'll take you." And she thought that she was calling his bluff, that then he and the others would back out and say, "No, it's all right." But she took them. And she sat and sat and sat in the car park waiting for the Randallstown youth rally to end. And it was like half an eternity. And she's thinking, never again. The next month, the youth rally for Randallstown came around, last Sunday in the month. "Mommy, can I go?" "Oh, yes, certainly. Can I go on my own? Can I drive?" "Oh, yes, that's no problem. You can drive." So sometimes they were pretty late nights. We'll try not to have a late night tonight. Our subject, only one life, or they were your age. And if you turn with me in the Bible to one verse, it's 1 Timothy and the chapter 4 and the verse 12. 1 Timothy 4 and 12, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." Steve Bremner has said what I've been thinking recently. He was born in Canada, and he is now a missionary in the country of Peru. And he runs a blog. I haven't a clue about him, but this particular statement resonated with me, and I thought, right, that's exactly what I want to say. And his blog, recent blog post was, "Life, only one shot at this thing." And he described then how his wife and he were privileged to spend about a month over Christmas the other year in Canada, and they were in Canada visiting their family. He said, "Our family loved the visit, as my father got to meet his granddaughter for the first time in person, as did other extended family. But then," he says, "here's what I want. One thing came to mind while I was there was the reality of how time marches on and stops for no one. I've lived in Peru for the last 7 years, and whenever I returned back to Peterborough in Ohio, in Canada, life didn't pause itself when I left. Things have moved on without me and continue to do so." And then he notes, "People have more grey hair than the last time I saw them. Some guys have gotten balder. Some people have gotten fatter, others thinner. Some people have passed on from this life to the next. As much as I might want to, I can't say, you know what, I don't really like this Peru thing. I think I want to rewind, to go back to the point in time and continue down this other path and see how it would have turned out." Now, what Steve Bremner is saying is absolutely true. What's done is done. Time is one thing you can spend, but you can never get a refund on it. And you can't come along and file, "I want a do-over of that particular time and live it again." And also, time, of course, is running out. Now, that thought has been forced in my mind in recent weeks, because I've had the opportunity to, as a guy, guys tend to be collectors. Another word for collectors, hoarders. So you collect all kinds of stuff. And ladies, if you go to marry one of them, you will find before long that he's taking over a complete room in the house. He'll be in from the garage in no time, and he'll have his little collection. Be they cars, some other kind of toys. But I've been able, over the past number of weeks, when we're talking about the Battle of the Somme, to indulge one of my little hobbies. Which is, I used to paint for a couple of years for Games Workshop, and therefore we've been able to do a bit of a display here. I've had other help as well. Peter Lunner, organist, has helped, and Norman McCain from Londonderry has helped in some of the groundwork there, and I've been able to run up a bit of a display of the Somme battlefield, in particular that sector where the 36th Ulster Division went out of Thiefel Wood and into the German trenches trying to take that ground. But as they launched themselves over that 15 to 16 mile front at the start of the Battle of the Somme, they find that contrary to the instructions they were given, oh, just get up there, run out of your trench, swarm over the German lines, because they're basically all dead. You've heard all the bombardments. For 7 solid days, we have pounded their lines to smithereens. There'd not be one of them left. You just take over their trenches. They get up. They find the Germans had tunneled down 30 to 40 feet into the ground. They were unshaken, unmoved, untouched by all of this artillery bombardment. And after the Ulsters and others along the line came out of their trenches, machine guns were manned on the German side, and they simply mowed down the British and French troops as well. Private Frank Lindley of the 14th York and Lancashire Regiment was one of those soldiers, and he said, it's only a matter of going over the top. That's what we were told. The Germans have been wiped out. But that was terribly inaccurate. He said, you could hear the bullets whistling past, and our lads were going down, flop, 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 in their waves, just as though they had all gone to sleep. He recalled how a Lieutenant Hurst was near to him, almost touching him there, and he said he'd just got married before our battalion left England, and he was a grand chap. But it wasn't long before the head of that lieutenant was taken off under the heel of German bullets. Downpatrick lad Samuel Craig was one of only 87 men who survived out of hundreds in the 7th Battalion of the Royal Irish Rifles after the Battle of the Somme. He said what the others said. We were told it was only a matter of going over the top. But the Germans were well dug in and they mowed us down. To keep everything as sort of local, on the 1st of July, 1916, 1,778 men died while serving in the Ulster Division. That's on day one. Of those 1,778 men who served in the Ulster Division who died that day, 314 were from this city, Belfast. 298 from County Antrim. 292 from County Down. 183 from County Armagh, 154 from County Londonderry, 116 from County Tyrone, 61 from County Donegal, that was part of Ulster, of course, at that time, 54 from County Fermanagh, 29 from County Monaghan, 16 County Cavan, and then there were another 261 men serving in the Ulster ranks that were outside, born outside of Ulster. Now, as I work my way through the records, you can get them online, of all of these men, and then you can put names to them, sometimes faces to them, villages and towns where they came from, all the rest of it. One thought that really embedded itself in me was this: how young these guys were. And then I thought, I'll be speaking on Sunday night coming to people exactly the same age as these men that I am reading about. Therefore, my title, They Were Your Age. Now, to try and make it a little bit graphic, I have got my volunteers. Well, maybe they're not volunteers, more conscripts, but that's how the war went. Started off the volunteers, then when that line dried up, they moved into conscripts. And we have some, so I'm calling in some help. And what I want them to do is to read out the names of some of those, just some. Not 1,778 of them, but just some from each county who fell among the ranks of the Ulster Division at the Somme. And whenever they come up and read out the names, I want you to put your hand up when your age is mentioned. They'd be saying private, so-and-so, rifleman, whatever. And then at the end, age 23. And if you're sitting in the meeting, age 23, please put your hand up. It'll only work if you cooperate. I'm relying on you. So can we have our line of conscripts, beginning with County Londonderry, moving through Fermanagh, then Tyrone, then Armagh, Antrim, County Down, and then we come to the city of Belfast, County Londonderry.
County Londonderry. Private Robert Anderson, Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Coleraine, age 26. Private John Logue, Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Glendermot, age 27. Lance Corporal David Adams, Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Ardmore, aged 23.
County Fermanagh. Private William Abraham, Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Ballymallard, aged 27. Captain Eric Norman Franklin Bell, 9th Battalion, the Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Enniskillen, aged 20. Lance Corporal Walter Henry Walsh, Royal Irish Rifles, from Pettigo, aged 21.
County Tyrone. Private John McGurgle, 9th Battalion, Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Erne, aged 21. Sergeant Isaac Walker, 9th Battalion, Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, from Dungannon, aged 26. The Lynns from Coal Island, when the First World War broke out, all four of their sons went to fight. Robert was killed in 1915 on the front line of Ypres. The youngest son, William, who was served in the Royal Irish Fusiliers, was next to die, aged 21, at the Battle of the Somme. A sergeant, he went out to get a stretcher to bring home an injured colleague and was killed by a shell. A month later, son number three, Private John Lynn, died in the trenches at Ypres. The oldest son, James, was sent home in Coal Island in 1917 by the War Ministry, perhaps feeling the Lynns had given enough. However, he re-enlisted and died in Palestine in 1920, the fourth and final Lynn son to die in active service.
County Armagh, Private Absalom Abraham, Royal Irish Fusiliers, from Portadown, age 19. Rifleman Joseph M. Adamson, Royal Irish Rifles, from Banbridge, age 23, and his brother John, age 20. Private Robert Nesbitt, Royal Irish Fusiliers, from Mitchell, age 24.
County Antrim, Private William White, 1st Irish Guards, killed in action on the 15th of September, 1916, from Bashane, age 20. Rifleman David Linton, Royal Irish Rifles, from Clock Mills, aged just 19. And William John McNeice, Royal Irish Rifles, from Ballymena, aged 23.
County Down, Rifleman William James Skilm, 11th Battalion, Royal Irish Rifles, from Downpatrick, aged 25. Rifleman Daniel McCutcheon, Royal Irish Rifles, from Donaghadee, age 21. Lance Sergeant Archibald Griggs, Seaforth Highlanders, from Hillsborough, age 20. Sergeant John Love, Royal Irish Rifles, from Downpatrick, age 30. All eight sons in the Love family served in World War I. John's brother Samuel died on 8th of April, age 23, and another brother George died in September 1916, age 34.
Belfast, Lance Corporal David Rutherford Connolly, Royal Irish Rifles, from Belfast, age 19. Corporal Robert Boyd McNeil, 15th Battalion, Royal Irish Rifles, from Sherwood Street, Belfast, age 17. Sergeant William Irvine, Royal Irish Rifles, from Belfast, age 21. Rifleman William Frederick McFadzin, 14th Battalion, Royal Irish Rifles, Craigie Road, Belfast, age 20. And Private John McWilliams, Royal Irish Rifles, Limestone Road, Belfast, age 19.
Well, I'd like all to thank all of those that have helped there, and I think it's given a fair appreciation of the spread of ages of the men, but by and large, young men that went to battle and died. And back in 1918, that's at the end of the war, it was only at that stage that men aged 21 and over were allowed to vote. Prior to that, the age was much higher. What you're probably not like to hear is that, as far as the ladies were concerned, in terms of voting rights there, it was only again at the end of the war, 1918, that he brought in a new act, the 1918 Representation of the People Act, and that gave women, but only women, who owned property, who were aged 30 minimum, the right to vote. And it was another 10 years before it was equalized there, and women of the age of 21 and over were allowed to vote. But the fact of it is, here are young men going off into the battle, giving their lives for the cause of king and country. They don't even have an entitlement to vote in their country. They can't alter the destiny of the politics of their country because they are disenfranchised, no vote. And yet they go out onto a foreign field and they give their lives, too young to vote, not too young to die. We are never too young to die. And I know, many, many years ago as I backpedaled in my life, at your age, I would have been thinking, death? No, not for me. Not for quite some time. And yet I had friends in primary school. One little lad died 10 years of age, killed by a car crossing the road going to the local sweet shop, and right through secondary school, and even more now, we hear it in our news bulletins all the time, the fact is underlined, we are never too young to die. But then another thought. Some say we are too young to do anything. They kind of stand in your way and they don't allow you to get your right to go forward and do something. And they're kind of saying, no, no, just wait until you mature a little bit more and then you'll be able to do that. The youngest British soldier to die in the First World War is thought to have been a mere 14 years of age. John Condon died on the 24th of May, 1915. And at that stage, you didn't have to be 18 to be in the army serving overseas. You had to be 19 to be an overseas soldier. But there weren't too many birth certificates back then. It was very easy to lie about your age. And we're told that this young fellow, John, he was so desperate, lived down in Waterford, so desperate to escape the poverty in his own family that he enlisted in the 3rd Battalion of the Royal Irish Regiment. And he enlisted way before the war began, in October 1913. And he gave his date at a certain age, said he was 18, and they kept him back, and allowed him to go when he had become 19. He was still only 14, but according to their records, was 19, and he lasted 6 months over in France, and then was killed. His parents thought he's still at the barracks around Dublin, until they received a letter that came in the post from the War Office telling them, your young son, he has tragically died, aged 19. But they discovered he was 14. Some people in Christian work, not just this material warfare, but spiritual warfare, they think young people are so unsuited. I mean, Martin Luther, who are you? We're thinking about you 500 years now down the line from the day that you stood up, took on the Roman Catholic Church, and nailed your 95 theses to the door of that church in Wittenberg. But who do you think you are? You're not even 30 years of age. How are you going to be able to take on the most powerful institution on earth, the Holy Catholic Church? And yet Luther did, and defied all evaluations about his lack of maturity and all the rest. There was a meeting of Baptist pastors in the late 1770s in Leicestershire. William Carey was one of the newly ordained pastors at that particular meeting. And he stood up and he argued, because there wasn't much missionary work being done in the late 1770s, and he argued, I have got a vision and a burden, and I would like to go and pioneer work among the people of India. And they laughed him to scorn, his fellow more aged and experienced pastors, and they said to William Carey back then, young man, sit down. You're an enthusiast. When God pleases to convert the heathen, he'll do it without consulting you or me. Adoniram Judson, At only 23 years of age, determined, I'm going to sail to the end of the world, to a region that at that time very few people knew anything about. And he said, I'm going to preach the gospel to the people in the land of Burma. And there's a book written about him entitled, How Few There Are Who Die So Hard. And he gave his life as a young man for those in Burma. George Whitfield, we were talking about him in an earlier service here tonight, and how he preached so many times, 300 plus, on one text, John 3:3, John 3:7, you must be born again. But he was going out and preaching in the churches, in the Church of England, after he'd just come out of college in Oxford and trained for the ministry, and they started to close the church doors and say, we don't want your message, this regeneration, you must be born again, we don't want to hear that. And so even Dight, he said, I'm going to preach outside then, in the open air. And they're saying, how old are you, George Whitfield? 22. And you're going to go out there and preach the gospel in the open air? That's not a work for a young man like you. But the Bible urges, 1 Timothy 4:12, we read it tonight, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word and conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You can lift up the baton and show the older ones how you live for Jesus Christ. Ecclesiastes 12:1, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, when the evil days come not. So what the Bible is saying, now is the time to work for Jesus. Then we come to a third and final thought, and it's this, we only have, this is echoing the missionary to Peru at the beginning that we quoted, we only have one shot at life. Make it count. So simple. And yet so often we miss sight of that completely in the way that we live. Time is running out for all of us. And so the best advice is, make your life count for God. On the first day of the Battle of the Somme, the Ulster men distinguished themselves as receiving 4 out of 9 Victoria Crosses on that day for valor, gallantry. They really did excel. Captain Eric Norman Franklin Bell from Inniskillen, serving with the 9th Battalion, Royal Inniskillen Fusiliers, was 20 when he died on the 1st of July, 1916, but for bravery, awarded posthumously the Victoria Cross. Rifleman Robert Quigg, who survived the war, serving with the 12th Battalion Royal Irish Rifles up in Bush Mills. There's a new memorial statue to him, and he went out 7 times to bring in his boss, as it turned out. Couldn't find him, but he brought a different man in every time. Rifleman William Frederick McFadgen, 14th Battalion, Royal Irish Rifles, died aged 20 on the 1st of July, 1916. I'm sure you know the story. A grenade had its pin dislodged, coming out of a box in the trench. Other men alongside of him were going to lose their lives, and he threw himself on that grenade. Blew up, killed him, but the rest were saved. And those soldiers said, as the what remained of our friend was carried away in a stretcher, we thought he gave his life for us. And he received decoration from the government. Again, the Victoria Cross. Lieutenant Geoffrey Cathern, 9th Battalion, Royal Irish Fusiliers, 25 years of age, died the next day on the 2nd of July, 1916. There's a famous poem, and you'll hear it read out at Remembrance Day services all across Europe. Binion's words. They went with songs to the battle, and you probably picked that up from what Jim was playing there. They were going full of exuberant joy with their pals, friends in the same street, school friends, all the rest of it, marching off to war, bubbling with energy. It's a long way to Tipperary, they were singing. Pack up your troubles. Little did they know to what they were actually going. They went with songs to the battle. They were young, straight of limb, true of eye, steady in the gloom. They were staunch to the end. Against odds uncounted, they fell with their faces to the foe. They shall grow not old. As we that are left grow old, Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. What about you tonight? Does the Lord have access to your life? Have you signed up for him? Are you saved by his grace? Are you following him, owning him as Lord? And saying, Lord, what's your will for my life? Because I know whatever I choose to do, it'll be a way down the scale of potential blessing from what God you would have for me. Are you looking to do something for him in eternity? And really, that's not too far away from any of us. In eternity, this is the only thing that will count. At the center of our Lord's Sermon on the Mount, and a lot of people quote the Sermon on the Mount, I have lost count of people who have said to me when I've knocked their door on outreach and started to talk about the Bible, they kind of despise a whole lot of things and ridicule and say, it's full of controversy, it's full of fables. But, you know, there's one passage I like, the Sermon on the Mount, they will say. And if you take them to Matthew 7, because they're thinking of the first 12 verses or so of Matthew 5 when they say the Sermon on the Mount, it didn't end at verse 12 of Matthew 5. It runs through Matthew 6 and into and finishing off at the end of chapter 7, and they don't really like the end of chapter 7. The house and the rock and the house built upon a foundation of sand that comes crumbling down when the storm hits it. What's your foundation for eternity? On what are you building? What are you relying upon? They don't really like that. But in the middle of that sermon, our Lord talked about, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth. In other words, don't be so earthbound in your thinking, because moth and rust corrupt, thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I close with the lines of a hymn that you're very familiar with. I have only one life on this earth, and as vapor it's passing away, I must labor for treasures of worth ere toil ends at the close of the day. One poor life. Sometimes we think we're kind of superheroes behind the wheel of a car, Mr. Invincible, if not Mr. Incredible. One poor life, it's all we are. Small, the offering at best. Yet the world and the flesh often call. This my answer must be to each test. I'll not serve God with less than my all. These young men served with all they had for king and country. Here's the ultimate King of Kings. Only one life to give. I could never withhold it from God. Only one life to live. I must not miss the well done of God. For what are we living? What are our goals and aspirations? Are we living for the glory of God? Because indirectly, if we live for his glory, that will certainly be living for our own good. Thank you for listening.